The 2023 Singapore Premier League season, well, that's off to a great start.
Debuts and goals all round as the title contenders put out an early statement of intent.
We'll chat all that and more on what went down on the opening weekend. This is the SPL Podcast. Hi everyone, this is Farah.
And this is Raushan.
Raushan, what an opening weekend of the 2023 campaign. Now, I know you went down to watch a few and some of them. How was that?
It was really good. It was good to have football back. To watch live football is an experience I particularly enjoy. And I was lucky enough to watch the opening game of the season, the Sailors against Tanjung Pagar. And I think just to watch Maxim Lestien play, I think it's worth watching every game the Sailors play. So I really enjoyed it. And there's plenty to discuss after the opening weekend. But right before that, plenty of news coming through over the past few days. So listeners, in case you missed it, here's what you need to know. The Lions are set to play away in Hong Kong and Macau during the March international window. So you have that to look forward to see how Takayuki Nishigaya fares after the debacle that was the AFF Mitsubishi Electric Cup. Also in the news is the Deloitte Women's Premier League kicks off on 18 March with 10 teams. That's up from 7 last year. Two clubs will be returning to the scene. Tampines Rovers, who last played in 2016, as well as Police Sports, who are the 2022 Women's National League champions. Geylang International FC are also set to make their debut this year in the Women's League. And one more news that's coming through is the Merlion Cup is back after a 3-year hiatus, with the Singapore under-22 team set to be led by Philip Au. So there's plenty to look forward to by the way of local football. Speaking of things to look forward to, he's one man I've been dying to hear from, and he joins us on the podcast, Deepan Raj Ganesan, sports reporter. Deepan, great to have you with us. How are you doing?
Thank you, Roshan. Thank you, Farah. Once again, glad to be on the first show of the SPL podcast. Looking forward to chatting more about Singapore football.
Yep, certainly. Let's first talk about the news I just mentioned, the Merlion Cup, before we get stuck in proper to the SPL, right? I know you're particularly excited about the return of the Merlion Cup.
Yeah, I think the Merlion Cup serves a purpose. This time being the fact that it's a preparation for the Under-22's SEA Games campaign. I think it will provide Singaporeans a first-hand opportunity to watch this particular team that's going to compete at the SEA Games. And of course, we must remember that the age limit, which was 23 at the last edition, is now 22, which means a couple of players are already ruled out, Jacob Mahler being an obvious one. So it's a brand new squad, I think, that will take place. I think we might see a couple of new faces, that have already shown for their respective club teams. And of course, the bulk of the team coming from the Young Lions. I can't wait for the tournament. I mean, of course, in 2019, when we last had the Merlion Cup, we won it against Thailand. Of course, a weakened Thailand team, but Iksan scored the winner. And I'm looking forward to a great tournament this time around.
Well, Deepan's looking forward to it. And well, so are we, Roshan. But let's crack on with our review. All the results that went down on match day one was nothing out of the ordinary. Everything we pretty much expected. But seeing that this is something that is brand spanking new for us this season, it is no surprise at all that VAR will be at the forefront of most of our conversations, especially in this earlier part of the campaign. We've seen it used in the Community Shield as well as match week one. Some have their praises and some not so much. Before we get into it, the Sailors' coach and captain shared with us, or Raushan, their thoughts on this new addition.
I think we could all see that, you know, the second half there was a lot of checks. It was especially frustrating for the players because we had to, you know, wait quite a bit in the second half, and I think that killed the momentum. I don't know about them, but for us, I think, you know, to wait and wait and wait, it was but then again, we have to accept that this is something new in our league, in our country right now. So I don't know, probably you'll get used to it as time goes on. We'll see.
The game is, becomes very long and frustrating. So I think maybe faster decisions, but it's something new, so we cannot judge it. Not yet, because it's the first game. So let them practice a little bit more. I think it's a good thing for football that We can check on what happened in the area, what happened if it was offside or not, maybe key decisions during the game, so it's very important for everyone. But the only thing I'm not agree is the time that we spend, you know, it cuts the intensity of the game, so I think we need to improve that part.
All right, guys, they said what they wanted to say about the VAR. What are your thoughts on this? Do we agree with Risto? Do we agree with Harris? Is it taking too long, Deepan?
You know, first of all, what I want to talk about when it comes to VAR, to answer your question, I'm not sure I can say it's taking too long because at the end of the day, this is the first week after all. I think there's a lot of getting used to it involved in this conversation. I think as the weeks go on, we will see a better usage and therefore the time taken to check, you know, coming down. But what I want to talk about is from a reporting perspective. I think when fans listen to these kind of shows, I think they want insight. So I'll try to give that. So I think VAR changes a lot of things, not just for the players, but also from the media perspective. So I say this because I was at the Lion City Sailors game against Tanjung Pagar. Had already written my match report as a 90th minute hit. And then I saw the fourth official put up 10 minutes on the added time, and that changes a lot of things, no? And you could see, you know, there were plenty more goals that came in that 10 minutes. So I think it changes a lot of things in terms of viewership as well, because right now you can't say that the game is done at 90 minutes because there could still be a lot of things that happen in added time because of the time that the referees are taking to check all these things. But having said that, I know that a few fans did have some complaints about the usage of VAR. I do think it's going to take some time before everybody gets used to it, even the referees getting used to it, because it's a brand new thing. I think we should cut them some slack in the opening weeks and then, you know, sharpen the knives as the weeks go along.
Roshan, what do you think about this? I mean, with the usage of VAR so far, we were very impressed with how it was used in the Community Shield. What have you made so far of it in Match Week 1?
I can attest to Deepan having a hard time with VAR from a reporting perspective, because the number of times I was sat beside him and he kept asking me, that VAR incident, how many of a minute? That VAR incident, how many of a minute? So it is a lot from a media perspective. But back to the execution itself, I must say I've been impressed. I'm not going to lie here. I had my reservations when it kicked off, and I've said it before on previous episodes. But I think, all things considered, I think the referees have done well. Both Harris and Risto talk about the duration of the decisions. That's something we've seen even when it was launched at the World Cup many years ago. Those are some teething issues that is bound to happen, and they want to make sure they get it right, because right now with technology, they don't have the clutch or the crutch to say we didn't have help making a decision. I think in terms of understanding, the SPL Express, actually, I have to be honest here, credit where it's due, provides great insight into certain particular decisions. So if you have time, go listen to that, but only after you're done listening to us. But again, I think from a fan perspective, it will take some understanding, and as much as us media people can help, we will try and explain those decisions. To answer your question, I think it's off to a good start. It will only get better as the season goes on.
Sorry, I just want to chime in on something. One thing I did notice, and Roshan just touched on it, the fact that I had to ask him a few times on VAR questions. I question myself whether it's better to now cover the game at the stadium itself or at home where I can watch the replays and know exactly what they're checking. Because a lot of times when I was at Bishan Stadium for the opening game, I was not quite sure what they were checking, and I had to refer to YouTube on my phone. And also, I think in the English Premier League, I'm not sure about other leagues, once the decision has been made, they will show the actual incident that they had checked on the screen there. I'm not sure if we have the facilities to do it, but it definitely does add some form of confusion, not just to reporters, but to fans as well, as to what exactly they are checking. So if there's one recommendation, would be to, you know, make it very clear. And the only way you can do that is by showing on the screen. And like I said, I'm not sure if they have the facilities to do that.
I'll answer that one. Actually, from my understanding, because I've been working in the production side of the broadcast, I think that's definitely in their plan. The plan is the venue itself is supposed to put up whatever is happening on the big screens. But like you said, I don't think some of them have the facilities for that. I mean, most of them are supposed to do that countdown thing that we see in the World Cup as well, the 10-9-8. Some of them weren't even able to do it. So, yeah, to be fair to FAS, I think that was always their plan. That was what they were supposed to do. They just haven't been able to pull that off because of the facilities of the venue itself. But yeah, definitely that's what they were meant to do.
Anyways, yeah, that's really good to know that they are taking it into consideration, right? Because I think some of the concerns we've raised is valid, and I'm sure we speak for a vast majority of stadium-going fans. So good to know, Farah. Thanks for the insight in terms of what's in the pipeline.
No worries. I actually did want to just quickly touch on this because I just wanted to get into this. You know how when VAR was first introduced to us, even in the English Premier League or whatever it was in Europe, the concern was that, you know, it would ruin the momentum of the game, right? Do you think we're now just used to that with all those added time and the slowing down of the game and just waiting on the referee to wait on the VAR officials to give them an answer on it? Like, have we just been so used to this that this is now part of our game today that it's really not a concern anymore? That our initial concern was the momentum of the game would be ruined and it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah, so I think because we are so used to watching the English Premier League, we are used to it. We are used to this stoppage. But it's not something I enjoy, that's for sure. Like, I think Risto Vidakovic, the Sailors coach, did talk about it and how that disrupted the momentum of his team. So I think for certain teams, especially for the underdogs, without any disrespect, it will help them because it helps to break down the game into smaller parts. So if you're having a backs against the wall kind of performance, then it helps you to, you know, regain some composure, you know, get your players to rest. That helps. But if you're an attacking team looking to have the momentum going in games, it's going to be really, really hard to do that because of all these stoppages. So I think fans will definitely have no choice but to get used to it, because I see VAR staying here. I mean, we've got to get used to it. So I don't see anything done about that.
All right, well, let's move on, shall we? Because the opening week also saw plenty of debuts on hand, but none more wholesome than the young guns who got to make their professional mark. At just 16 years and 10 days old, Izam Iswan made history by becoming the youngest sailor and the third youngest debutant in the league, along with Jonan Tan and, of course, not forgetting Daniel Goh for the Tigers. Now, Deepan, with more than one youngster catching the eye this past weekend, perhaps the future is not so bleak for our beloved Lions?
I love how you phrased the question. I would hope to think so, that, you know, there's a bright future for the future of this national team. Yeah, and for sure, I think that Sailors game was really, really something that I'll remember from the opening week, because I have watched Jonan Tan in action during preseason friendlies, and he is someone who stood out for me. So I was really glad to see him make his debut. And of course, it's not like, you know, this debut was just handed out for the sake of it, right? Because I think Risto Vidakovic really wants to build on that, have a pipeline for the Lion City Sailors. And there's a clear and concentrated effort to blood all these young players for the Sailors. So that bodes well. And of course, you mentioned Daniel Goh as well. What a performance this week, although he ended up on the losing side. Not just him, I think Haugang has Ajay Robson, a player to look forward to. Young Lions have a couple of new players this season. You know, I think they have started fairly well, despite the fact that the results haven't quite gone their way. I think we'll talk about it a bit later on. But all these players, it's what's needed for the league. Because I think without any disrespect to the older players that have been around for some time, we are in desperate need of new faces, new storylines, really, really new players that we can know more about. And the likes of Jonan Tan, Daniel Goh, these are all players that are important to our league. And I hope they continue to get the game time to grow.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I feel it's exciting. A lot of people have been saying they want the Sailors to go out there and mount this title charge, right? What I'm particularly excited with the Sailors is they've changed their tech. They've signed a whole bunch of youngsters from the Young Lions, including Abdul Razak and including Danish Kayum. So all these players are going to get a proper infrastructure now to build on their potential. And we've seen in the years gone by, the likes of Tampines Rovers provide players for the national setup, right? Now it almost seems like the Sailors have taken it upon themselves to do that service for the national team, and I'm excited for the future of all these young ones and Daniel Goh, who I just feel is too good for Balestier Khalsa. I'm not churning the rumour mill or anything, but I don't see him staying at Balestier for too much longer, and that can only mean good things for Singapore football.
Yep, exciting times indeed for Singapore football, but guys, I guess it's time for us to move on to our preview section. Plenty to look forward to this weekend, and the games are coming thick and fast. On match week 2, we will finally see the return of Brunei DPMM after their 3-year absence, and it's bound to be a cracker as they take on the Lion City Sailors in this Friday night clash at the Bishan Stadium with kickoff at 7:45 p.m. Now, there's nowhere else to begin than with that Tanaka and Lestian combo. Is that going to cause a problem or two for Brunei DPMM and in general for the entirety of the season for the rest of the clubs, Stephen?
For sure. I mean, you look at that particular game in the opening weekend, Kodai Tanaka was not anywhere near 100%. I think that was quite clear even before he said it post-game. And despite that, he ended up with 2 goals, you know, and both were poacher's finish, you know, being at the right place at the right time. And honestly, I think if Raushan and I were playing for the Lion City Sailors with Lestian's service, we might even get a goal or two in a season. So someone like Tanaka, I think he's going to lap it up. Because look, I think we talk about this very often, you know, what Lestian brings to the league. I can't emphasize it enough, you know, the quality that he has. And he is one reason alone why Lion City Sailors, despite the fact that they have, I would say the quality in the squad is diminished because of the outgoings and the younger incomings. Because they have Lestian, they'll always have a chance. And Tanaka is a supreme finisher. He finishes things that, you know, other strikers might not be able to because of how, you know, lethal he is in front of goal. And I was watching the SPL Express as well earlier, and they were talking about the different combinations of forwards that the Singapore League has had. And I agree, you know, I think these two, they will remind us of all the greats like Ekma and Perez, the different kind of strikers that the league has had, the really legendary ones. I think this combination of Lestian and Tanaka will be right up there when the season ends. But for it to be one of the best or considered the best, they've got to win the league. And that will only time will tell what happens with that.
Roshan, what are your thoughts on this combo?
For me, the most exciting thing is, because I can't add on much further to what Deepan has said about the Tanaka-Lestian combo, but we haven't even considered Diego being added to that trident that the Sailors are capable of. So Lestian will rack up the assist because he's always going to play the final pass. But the pass before the final pass, more often than not, is going to come from Diego. So when you stitch all those things together, it is quite scary, the potential or the ceiling that this trio can achieve and the success that the Sailors can continue to have. And just to add on to Deepan's point, if that is a 60% Kodai Tanaka, according to his own words, bless him, he tries as much as he can in English, then I think the league has plenty to fear if he's at 100% at full tilt, which eventually he will be. And I think this LCS team will be a scary prospect going forward, because I think he's the sort of player who goes all out for 90 minutes and not a lot of teams are going to cope with him for 90 minutes. As we saw against Tanjung Pagar, they did well. He kept fairly quiet for most of the game, but he was in the right place at the right time at the back as Tanjung Pagar were chasing the game, and he got his 2 goals and duly deserved his 2 goals. So it's going to be exciting to watch.
All I'm concerned about is how many goals Deepan think he can score with Lestian's services. Deepan, give us a number.
Well, maybe if it's 10 years ago, I would put 5 goals. But in my current state, I would be lucky to get 2, I would say.
That's good enough. That's good. We will take it.
That's more than some strikers have had in recent seasons. So
I was waiting for that. All right.
Don't talk about white calls like that, please.
We have to move on to DPMM. Deepan, what do we know about them and what should we expect from them here?
Funny question. You ask me what do I know about them for the coming season. I'll be frank, not much. Because the team that has been playing in their local league and smashing teams left, right and centre, it's not a good gauge, because that's like me and Roshan playing 2-1 against you. You know, it's not a fair gauge at all. So it's tough. But based on the players that have been around from previous seasons, and I'm talking about Varanko, it's going to be a good team. I think Varanko, as we have seen in recent seasons, is one of the best strikers to have graced the Singapore Premier League over the last couple of years. And I think Brunei will rely on him heavily. And again, that's the only thing, right? Like whether he still retains that form, because he's also not been playing regular football or regular competitive football in the last couple of years. But you know, on paper alone, there are other foreigners, like one of the Croatian midfielder, and of course, Engel Martinez, Spanish under-21 international. I think they all add quality to the squad. But my only worry is, when you just think logically, a team that has not played proper competitive football for the best part of 2 to 3 years, can they really cope with a team like Lions City Sailors, who have already firstly started their season in a winning form, and secondly, a team that has been playing regular football the last two years. So it's going to be tough for Brunei DPMM, but I'm not going to count anything against them, because we have seen before the quality that they can play, they can have, and they've got a top-class manager in Pannock.
Yeah, just to add on to what Deepan said, I agree there might be cobwebs for this DPMM team who have been in exile for a couple of years now, right? But that Varanko factor going up against that fairly untested LCS defense. Look, Lionel Tan and Bill Mamadou had it easy in the opening game against Tanjung Pagar. That was because Marin got injured early on and Tanjung Pagar really didn't provide much up front in terms of running directly at them. I do feel Varanko will be a much bigger test, and that is really where DPMM will look to trouble LCS. And it's going to be a fascinating encounter this Friday at Bishan Stadium, so it's one to really look forward to and a great way to kickstart Match Week 2 as well.
Guys, my favorite part of the segment is here. We do have to ask you for your predictions. So Deepan, how will this one play out?
Tough one, because like I said, I don't really know what to expect from Brunei DPMM, but I do think the first game back is going to be really tough. I think DPMM will catch on later on, but for the first game, I expect a heavy defeat for them. I think Sailors win this one 3-0.
Wow, okay, Roshan, what about you?
I expect the Sailors to win this purely because I agree with Deepan's point that they are a team who have been playing together for a longer time as compared to Brunei. But I suspect it won't be as straightforward. I think the LCS defense is there for the taking. So I'm going to go 4-2 for LCS this Friday.
Wow, okay. Well, simultaneously at the Jurong East Stadium, Tanjung Pagar will welcome Tampines Rovers, both hoping to get their first win on the board. That one kicks off at 7:45 p.m. as well. Guys, I just want to go straight into Boris, right? He was pretty underwhelming against Geylang in their opener. Might the expectations of him to produce the same as last season be too much? I know it's early days, but does it feel like it might be too much this season, Deepan?
You know, I was having a conversation. I won't name names. I was having a conversation with a current defender in the Singapore Premier League, and he was telling me that Boris is one of the most predictable strikers to defend against in the league. And a lot of defenders allowed him to take advantage of that one key attribute that he had, which is his size last season, and allowed them to be turned over. I'm not quite sure if I agree with him, but I think we saw a bit of that in the opening game where basically Geylang's defense knew how to deal with Boris. He's been around for some time now. I'm sure all the defenders know how he plays. So I think it's on Boris now to step up his game. Perhaps the first game, you know, he wasn't able to do it, but I'm not going to count against him because I think on his day, he can be a top forward. But right now, what's important is he needs the help of the players around him. So your likes of Faris Ramli or Taufik Suparno. And going back to that, I think in the first game, Taufik was not great. Faris Ramli had a good finish. I thought he had a decent enough debut game. But I think all these players around him have to chip in more. So your Kyoga, Nakamura, you know, can't just be scoring your 30-yard strikes anymore. He needs to contribute in with late runs into the box. Your Saifullah Akbar and your Joel Chu off the bench, they need to contribute with goals. And then I think there'll be less attention on Boris. Right now, I think the defenders are too focused on Boris, and that makes it very hard for him. And let's see how they do against Tanjung Pagar.
Unfortunately for the listeners, this is an audio-only podcast, but Farah was trying to crack her brain about who the defender Deepan was speaking to. Deepan never reveals his secret, so we're not going to find out. But great insight again, Deepan. Does. Thank you so much for that. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Boris can be a tad too predictable. We saw it. I've been on commentary when he scored like 4 goals against Young Lions or something last season, and he literally bullies them like a flat track bully lah. So I think he has become a tad too predictable. But just on the flip side, in terms of Boris occupying the defenders, perhaps that then opens up space for the likes of Faris Ramli, who I think is going to have a big season. And again, like they mentioned on the SPL Express, Faris did strike up a great partnership with Stipe Plazibat at Hougang many years ago. So perhaps that's something Tampines or Gavin will be hoping they can replicate, because I do think Boris has goals in him and he's been around long enough. But going back to your question, yes, last season, he raised the bar for himself very, very high. He added free kicks to his range of scoring abilities. Eventually, he'll find his feet this season. And I suspect, judging by what the Tanjung Pagar defense put out the other day, they might be difficult to beat, but I expect Boris to break his duck and get his first league goal this weekend.
All right. With that said, Deepan, Roshan, predictions?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think I'm not quite sure what the status of Tanjung Pagar's injury list is, because, of course, we did see two injuries to their foreigners in the first half. So I think Marin as well is quite important, because he seems to be their focal out-and-out experience forward. I mean, of course, by not including Khairul Amri into that, because I'm not sure if he's ready for 90 minutes at the moment. So I don't see Tanjung Pagar, you know, causing too much damage, but I see them holding it to a tight one. I see Tampines perhaps just edging this 1-0.
Roshan, will Tampines age this according to you?
Just a bit of team news. I think Marin, who had a bad injury, had to go through stitches after Friday's game. Apparently, word in the camp is he'll be clear to play. It'll be interesting to watch if he does, because I think he'll be crucial to Tanjung Pagar's chances. Having said that, I suspect this will be a draw game. I'm going for 2-2 on Friday. Clearly, I'm hoping it's raining goals on Friday, because I predicted 4-2 earlier. All things considered, I just hope it doesn't rain at all, because then the games will be delayed.
All right. Yes, please. No delays whatsoever. That one was intense, that Geylang one. Now, Saturday sees Balestier Khalsa looking to put their disappointment at the weekend behind them when they take on the Young Lions at the Bishan Stadium. Kickoff for that one, 6 p.m. Now, one place I want to begin with is with Peter Deroux, because when we spoke earlier on in the pre-match, he said that he was looking for a bit more balance in his side this season. Deepan, do you think we got a glimpse of that in match week one? A little bit more balance to his side?
If by balance you mean a shit first half and a good second half, then the balance was there. But seriously, I think Balestier showed what they can be in that second half against Hougang. And I hope to see more of that. Look, I think this first 11 that Balestier has, I think it's good enough to win games. And they should be winning teams like Young Lions easily. I think that first game as well, I think we were looking to Koza, of course, the new deep-lying central midfielder, to show something. And I thought he had a decent first game, not quite the greatest of game, but I think he will grow into it. You look at his CV, you know, I don't think there's much chance of him being a failure. But when Peter Deroux talks about balance, I think he's mainly focusing on him, because at the end of the day, they didn't have that profile in the team last year, a number six who can be the link between defense to midfield and then midfield to attack. And like we talked about earlier, Daniel Goh, you know, he is an exciting player, and with Sugita on the other flank, Balestier Khalsa really have more than one danger zone to attack from. So yeah, I'm looking forward to more from Balestier Khalsa. I actually had them down as one of the dark horses this season, if they can get the team going without, you know, any major injuries. But you also have if you mention the good parts, you got to mention the bad parts, which is that I'm not sure they got the depth in defense. I think Madu and Emmerich, I wouldn't blame them for any of the goals that were conceded the other day. I think Hyrule had a bigger part to play in those goals than anyone else. But you know, you question whether that kind of defense will hold up against some of the better strikers in the league. So that's the only concern. But this team that they have this season is definitely better than the one last year. And I expect them to collect more points than they did last season.
And just zooming in on their Saturday opponents, who are the Young Lions, because Deepan has already told us everything Balestier, right? I think the Young Lions, they've already played two matches, and yes, it was a better showing on Tuesday, at least going forward. Against Albrecht, it was always going to be tough. But I don't think it will immediately... Philip Au is not going to be the magic potion immediately, right? It's going to take a bit of time, especially with the number of players that left and the new players they're trying to breed in. So while a lot of people have said, yes, they've signed two Japanese boys, suddenly the Young Lions should be up and running in a different way, I think you need to throw caution to the wind slightly on that front, whereby it is going to take some time. So to the Young Lions' credit, yes, they look like they have a bit more going forward, but it's that defense. Do they still have that soft underbelly that I'm worried about? All things considered, this Saturday against Balestier Khalsa, I suspect Balestier will pick up their first 3 points, and it's just going to cap off what's been quite a miserable first week back in the top flight for the Young Lions.
Since you've already gone there, how about you give us a prediction for this one, Roshan?
I say 3-1 to Ballester because I think Ryoya Taniguchi is going to cause all sorts of problems for the Young Lions backline.
Deepen.
Yep, I'll go for 3-0. Ballester to keep a clean sheet and also get a convincing win.
All right. Finally, match week 2 rounds off at our Tampines Hub. Geylang International played their third game in 8 days, and this time they face a tough test against Hougang United, both coming into this on the back of their respective wins. So, guys, who will have the upper hand here? How do we see this one playing out, Deepen?
Yeah, so I think that Geylang, first of all, have been impressive. I'll be honest, in the first game against Tampines, I didn't give Geylang much of a chance purely because I looked at that squad and I was thinking, wow, if they have anything that happens to that first 11, who's going to come off the bench? And I looked at the bench and honestly, I don't recognize many of the names that were on the bench. So a bit of a problem there. And then we saw in midweek, they registered Shafiq Ghani out of nowhere. So suddenly they have got quality coming off the bench, at least one or two players coming off the bench. But, you know, against the Young Lions, it could have easily gone wrong for them because the weather was terrible. The pitch was waterlogged in some areas, in some parts of the game. They went down a goal, you know. It could have been tough, but quality showed. And in the first game, Yushi Yamaya might have not had a great game. But against Young Lions, I think we saw a glimpse of what he can do. He was beating players really easily. I mean, granted, it was the Young Lions' defense and they're not quite as experienced as some of the other pro defenders in the league. But you can clearly see that Yushi Yamaya will bring quality to this Geylang team. And at the same time, Hougang, you know, we've already seen them twice this season. The first game, less said, the better. But in that second game, you know, quality goals and they have quality players, clearly. Defenders who can play on the ball. They've got midfielders who are really going to be attacking. And then, of course, up front, they've got quality. But, you know, the question remains, and this is funny because they scored 3 goals in the opening game. But you still question whether they can create enough quality in attack to overpower some of the better defenses in the league. And to me, I think this is clear-cut the game of the week because you can't really pick at this stage a winner because Geylang have shown in these 2 games that they're good. Hougang, on paper, you know, they show that they have one of the better teams in the league. I can't wait for this one. I'm sure Raushan is as excited as me.
Yeah, it should be a tasty, tasty affair on Sunday. I think, Deepen, you've set the scene brilliantly. What I do want to say is it's surprising for me how much this Hougang defense is struggling because they've signed 2 top-quality Japanese centre-backs and their full-backs are now no more young guns, right? They're using the experience of Irwan Shah as well as Nazrul Nazari. Yet, the defense has been found wanting in the past 2 games, conceded 5 in the past 2. And I think that's something Firkas would be addressing in his training sessions in the build-up to this game. I know in the season preview, I gave some stick to Iqbal Hussain, who I felt was a bit of a lost cause, but I think he covered himself in glory in terms of the opening exchanges as well. So that's something that could cause this Hougang backline some form of trouble. All things considered, it should be a fascinating encounter at our Tampines Hub this Sunday. And I take your point, Geylang, third game in 8 days, but I think it matters little because the season is still in its infancy and they should all be fresh and raring to go. And hopefully Geylang can keep their momentum going and maintain that charge at the top purely because they've had the head start of 2 games.
You know what I would call this game? I would call it the no number 9 derby because Geylang, of course, don't have a bona fide number 9. Hougang don't have a bona fide number 9. So it'll be interesting to see the tactical battle as well. And this is a question maybe I want to pose to Raushan. Do you foresee that being a problem as the season goes on for both these teams? Because, of course, we know what Zuzul did for Geylang. And Yushi Yamaya has been starting on the right with Naufal Azman through the middle for Geylang. He's not an out-and-out striker. And then, you know, Bezakor, you know, playing the midfield attacking role. And then Iqbal from the left. I'm not sure what kind of combinations they can strike up to have someone else as a forward. Same for Hougang, you know, I think they have been using different players in that so-called false nine role. Hazwan has had it a few times. Sometimes in that game against Bersi, we saw Gabriel, the most advanced forward. Do you see this being a problem for both these teams?
I think with regards to the Singapore Premier League, we've seen this number 9 take up the goals and score plenty. Boris was the one that comes to mind for me when you talk about a bona fide number nine scoring goals, right? But overall, I do feel like football has evolved slightly in a sense where there are wingers who are chipping in with goals. Kodai Tanaka famously scored a bucket load last year while playing on the left as well. So it's about what these teams can extract. They may play a false number nine, but then the supporting cast need to come in and chip in with goals. I touched on it briefly during the preview in terms of Haugang. I do worry because I don't think one of Emi Reka or Sahil Suhaimi have the 15-20 goals in them. But you look at the likes of Kiki Krychek, if he can go into double digits, perhaps that bodes well. Gabriel Kwek eventually has to find his feet for the Cheetahs as well. So perhaps there's something going on there. Same for Geylang, if they can get Yamaya firing down the right and he's going to chip in with spot kicks as well, then perhaps they don't need that out and out number nine as the center focus of their team. And I think it's a matter of the rest sharing it among the rest of the front line rather than relying on one 40 goal a season striker. If anything, that provides in sense a reliability in case one of the players is out, at least the rest can chip in with goals. So you're not putting all your eggs in a number nine basket. That's the way I look at it. And I think that's the way these two coaches will be thinking of it for the rest of the season as well.
Yeah, and as Raushan said, I think the exciting thing is to see two local coaches, I dare say up and coming local coaches, you know, trying to find a solution to not having a number nine. I know you're laughing because I'm referring to Noah Ali as an up and coming. But I do, the reason why I say that is because I think a lot of people have always criticized Noah Ali for Geylang's performances or the position in the table. But the thing is, you see what he has achieved in some sense with a squad that, like I keep saying, you know, it's only that first 11, and this is because Geylang have decided to have a squad like that. And I think that when you have a manager only being with one team, and in this case, Noah Ali with Geylang all the way, he hasn't quite have a huge portfolio to show his work. And we can only judge him from what he's doing with that first 11. And I think he's done a fantastic job. So I do hope one day, you know, later on, Noah Ali will get a better opportunity, because I think we have all heard that he has turned down some opportunities in Malaysia to stick with Geylang. I do sense a good future for both these coaches, Firdaus and Noah Ali, in the years ahead.
47 years young, that's how young Noah Ali is as an up-and-coming coach. But I think your point entirely, it's about the opportunities. You're talking about the resume rather than the age, so I understand. And we talk about this being a tactical battle. For those of us who know, for those of us who don't know, the touchline battle should be fairly tasty as well, because we know Firkas and Noah Ali don't exactly see eye to eye.
All right. With all that said, guys, prediction time. Come on, Deepen.
I'm going to cop out and sit on the fence for this one. I think 2-2 is probably how this game ends.
Roshan?
I say 3-2 to Haugang, Gabriel Kwek to score the winner.
Sensational stuff. Okay. Guys, I know this is not part of our flow for today, but I do want to ask you and just put you on the spot. I know last season we did like the player to look out for every match week, right? But I'm actually very interested. I want to know who you think will be the standout player for match week 2. Deepen, on the spot. Go.
Wow. I'm going to look at the Sailors game against DPMM. And because in that first week, I thought Diego Lopez wasn't quite the Diego that we have seen in the league, I think he comes to the fore for match week 2. I think he will get at least a goal and an assist against DPMM.
For me, I'm going to go with Daniel Goh, because we've waxed lyrical about him. And football is a form game. The boy is on brilliant form. I think scored 5 games in a row dating back to last year. Going up against a Young Lions team who played 2 matches in, 8 days now? So they're there for the taking. And with Daniel's pace, you know he can cause a damage or two. So I expect Daniel Goh to continue his rich vein of form.
So he'll be Daniel Goal in
And that's the last time Deepen will be on this podcast.
we say this next week. We're like, guess who's back?
Deepen. All right, listeners, we hope you enjoyed episode 1 of the SPL podcast now that the season is up and running proper. Farah and I will strive to deliver the best talking points for you on a weekly basis with guests who can try and match up to Deepen's high standards. Deepen, thank you so much for your time on this episode. Listeners, do tag us in any conversation you want to get going. As Raushan says, or Farhan Iyer, or the Final Whistle, we'd love to hear from you. We'll see you on the next episode.